This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
I'm Helen Farmer. Great to have you with us. And on today's episode, celebrating people of determination in the UAE, while this is the best country to be, with an advocate and hearing real life stories too. Also hearing from Katie Rees about the decision to raise her daughter alone here in Dubai. And House and House, it was a bit of a property special. What you need to know about buying off plan, some of the hottest areas in town. And it was Jasmine Stevenson of Kashwani who was on hand to help with any legal woes. I'm so happy to have a proper sit down and introduce you to a really incredible person. Gulshan Kavarana is a dedicated advocate, spokesperson for people of determination here in the UAE. And her journey began in her youth, volunteering at schools. And then after moving to Dubai, her daughter's diagnosis of Dravet syndrome led her to establish a special families support group, now celebrating 25 years. Gulshan also mentors artists and worked at Mawaheb, one of my favourite places in the city, for a decade, and hosts a podcast sharing unfiltered stories, aiming to raise awareness, promote inclusion. She's also won several prestigious awards, including the Most Inspiring Woman from Arabian Business, who have also nominated her among the top 100 most powerful Indians in the GCC for five consecutive years. She's also a thoroughly nice person, which I'm glad you're here, Gulshan. How are you today?
So happy to be here. Thank you, Helen. Listen to you every single day.
Oh, well, it's your time in the hot seat, my friend. And you've also brought some guests for us as well. Who's going to be joining us after 2:30?
So I have Zara Kumri, who has a condition called achondroplasia, which is a form of dwarfism. And I have Abdullah Lutfi, who I mentor, who I don't think needs an introduction because he's so famous right now.
His work is everywhere. So we're going to be catching up with them after 2:30 today. Let's start with you, if you don't mind, Gulshan. Tell us a little bit about your beginning, your journey into what we now think of, and I think I love the phrase as do you, the people of determination community. Tell us about where it started.
So it started, I have a cousin who's 4 years younger than me and he has Down syndrome. We didn't even know the word Down syndrome then. You know, they were called Mongols. And, you know, he lived in another city. So when we moved to Mumbai, I always looked for him, you know. And I said, okay, I found. And I didn't know what to call people with Down syndrome. So I called them Huttu because that was his pet name. So he was my first, you know,
experience.
The love that I have. Mm-hmm. And luckily, in the school that I went to, we had a special needs section there. And we were given an opportunity to either go and work, do a social service there. Or we could go to the Mother Teresa orphanage, which had children with special needs as well. Mm-hmm. So it was just win-win. I used to, you know, sometimes choose this or sometimes choose that. And it was, I loved being around them. And yeah, that's...
Tell us about coming to Dubai then, and then the birth of your daughter.
So I moved here with my husband and my older daughter. My daughter was Jinai, she was 7 years old. And my husband moved because of his job. And I was pregnant with my second daughter. I knew I was going to have a daughter. I was really happy about it. And everything was just perfect. You know, she was born... You know, she was. I had this thing with God, give me a normal child and I will work with people with disabilities for the rest of my life. So when Zara was born, she was born absolutely normal. I took her for a vaccine the day that Princess Diana had died. And it was a sad day. We all were mourning. And I took her to the hospital to give her the routine vaccine. She was 4 months old. And she had a seizure. 16 hours after the shot, we thought we lost her that day. And she turned blue, you know, she stopped breathing. And my husband was holding her and he said, she's gone. And we just sat there. And then I said, no, we have to do something. We have to rush her to the hospital. So we did. They revived her. And they said, don't worry, this is a one-off situation. It's a febrile convulsion and don't worry about it. So I continued vaccinating her and more and more and more damage was done. I know people will hate me for saying these things, but this is my story. It's happened firsthand and we live with it every day. So later on, Zara was diagnosed with Dravet syndrome, which is a rare kind of epilepsy. It was called severe myoclonic epilepsy in infancy. And, you know, I was struggling to come to terms with this. Mm-hmm. And since I had bargained with God and I had to keep my promise, I went to the Dubai Center for Special Needs and I was a volunteer there for 13 years. I have a background in art. So I used to work in the art section there. And I loved it. You know, I loved being around them. I was a hypocrite. I loved being around people with disabilities, but I didn't want one of my own.
Isn't that interesting? And how did you find that with your relationship with your daughter then, that kind of tension and difficulty?
So it was horrible for me. Mm-hmm. I just could not come to terms with it. I was really, you know, I just wanted to meet other parents who were in a similar situation and I couldn't find anyone. And then one of the teachers there, she was Canadian, she said, you know, you're just going to burn out at this level. Mm-hmm. You need to join a support group. And I said, I swear I can't find anything. She said, if you can't find one, start one.
And
I did.
And now it's been 25 years. But I think that's such a testament to you and your spirit of I can take something else on, but ultimately to help you build your tribe and your community, because, you know, we do put so much emphasis on the child and on treatments and, you know, all of those resources. But it is the people around them, the siblings, the parents, who, as you mean, you had said the word burnt out there, who, you know, who have just been pulled in a million different directions and worried about the finances and worried about not being understood, but having probably quite uncomfortable and maybe unpleasant conversations with yourself and with other people about the reality of life. What was it like to meet people who'd had some shared lived experiences and seen the highs, but seen some really tough lows as well?
So, you know, the support group started in my living room with six families. And there was this mother, her daughter with Down syndrome was 21 years old. And she was just breaking down and crying. And I said, that's not where I ever want to be. Mm-hmm. You know, she said, this is the first time I can open up and talk about my journey. And I said, so why didn't you just do it before? And she said, we just couldn't find anything. And, you know, it's just been wonderful. And the support group is not only for the mother or the child. It's for the whole family. Mm-hmm. So even when grandparents are visiting, they come. And, you know, the siblings. Right now we have a summer camp. We run a summer camp every year. So we have a summer camp run by one of the siblings. Her name is Kushbu. And a person of determination. You know, his name is Sharan. He's on the podcast. So he has muscular dystrophy. He's getting weaker. He's on the bed. But he sends emails every single day to get an event for the support group.
One of the UAE's most dedicated and inspirational advocates for people of determination is in the studio. Gulshan Kavarana has her own podcast dedicating to sharing truly inclusive, positive, uplifting stories from that community. She's also the founder of the Special Family Support Group. We've just been talking about what a life-changing experience it was for you to start that group and find your tribe after your daughter's diagnosis, but also for other families here in the UAE. You mentioned before you've got a background in art and you spent about a decade at Mawaheb for beautiful people. For anyone that's not familiar with Mawaheb, and I have got two enormous pieces of art in my dining room from incredible artists. It's had a few different locations and kind of iterations over the years, but can you explain a little bit more about it?
So Wemi Damaka, the founder of Mawaheb, you know, I just met her because she did an event where she wanted to introduce people of determination to art. And she had a contest. And then I told her, you know, I would love to work with you. And one day she just called and she said, I'm coming to your house. I'm in the vicinity. Can I come? I said, yeah, sure. I was 46 years old. I'd never worked in my life. I used to volunteer, but I never got paid. And my mother kept saying, you know, you're successful only when you work. When you are financially independent, you're successful. So all these awards and nothing matters. Be successful. Be financially successful to be called a success.
That was her measure.
That was hers. So then when Wemi, you know, when she said, I said, I'm 46, I've never worked. I don't even know if I can. She said, let's give it a shot. And I had 10 most beautiful years of my life. I had 27 artists with disabilities. The first 5 years I was alone, and I had wonderful, wonderful volunteers from all parts of the world mm-hmm. who came and volunteered. And it was through art that we were teaching them life skills.
How exactly? We are going to be meeting an artist that you mentor next. And I'm really, really excited to meet him. We've got Abdullah Lufti joining us. Tell us about how art can inspire, especially in a community that might have never been invited to sit at the table.
So, you know, everyone thinks that, first of all, they don't respect them as adults. They're people of determination, they're adults, but invariably they're called children. And everyone thinks their work is also child art. And they don't see it as, you know,
a real valid expression.
But they mm-hmm. are the true artists. Mm-hmm. They do it without an ego. They don't do it for me or for you or to sell or to get money. They don't do it with that agenda. Mm-hmm. They just do it because they love art so much. Mm-hmm. And that was such a learning experience for me. You know, they were not afraid of a blank canvas. If I give you a blank canvas
I would freeze.
Yeah, you'll say, what do you want me to do? So it's just like giving a blank canvas to you and saying, this is your life. So what are you going to do? You're going to make a plan.
And do you think that's kind of unlocked a different way of a lot of people seeing themselves?
Exactly. And they seeing themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start believing in them, they start believing in themselves.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the podcast, which we are going to be exploring further. Gulshan with us in the studio. Tell us a little bit about the decision to start a podcast series. What's your goal? Because it's become a really impressive platform for hearing stories that really haven't been heard much before at all, Gulshan.
So I have to say, it was Oprah Winfrey. I grew up watching her, you know, and I have even written it in my, you know, what do I want for the future for myself? I used to say that I want to talk to people of disabilities and I want to hear their stories mm-hmm. and I want the world to hear their stories, because nobody asks them, what do you want for the future? You know, or even in a restaurant, when we take them, we don't ask them, what do you want? What do you want to eat today? You know, it's always, okay, you'll have a burger, fine. You know, and then we just move on. But that has to stop. Mm-hmm. And we have to ask them, what are their plans for the future? How do they want people to address them? Mm-hmm. How do they want people, you know, to talk to them? You know, when someone's sitting in a wheelchair, how do you want someone?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. And I said to you before the show, what's your preference? Would you prefer me to talk about people with disabilities or people of determination or additional needs? And you said, whatever. Yeah. As long as we're talking, it's the most important
exactly.
thing. But that's us. I think when, as you rightly say, when you're giving somebody a platform, people that have been overlooked, ignored, slimed for so long, kind of giving some power back, must be amazing for you to see people blossom and to feel truly heard. Well, you know, how do you think society's perception of people with determination has changed over the years? And I know you've been in the UAE for around 18 years, so this is your kind of lived experience here, but whether it's Dubai or global...
27 years.
Oh gosh, have you? Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. How do you think people's perception has changed?
So I have to say, you know, I have traveled with my daughter Zara, who's in a wheelchair. We've been to America. We've traveled to the Far East. We've, of course, India. But there's no place like the UAE. You know, seriously, this is the place. If you have a child or if you are a person of determination, this is the place you need to be. You know, I can just ring up RTA and say, there isn't a ramp here. The very next day, a ramp is put. You know, there was a time at the airport, I had a shoulder surgery. I couldn't take Zara to the washroom and my husband had to. So which washroom does he take her to? To the gents or to the women's? Mm-hmm. And he obviously took her to the men's toilet. Luckily, there was a cop there and he came chasing and he said, shame on you, you are the mother, you should be... I said, no, I can't. I can't lift her. Mm-hmm. And my husband has to do it. And are you telling me that my husband can never travel alone with my daughter? Do I have to always be there? And so I made this big, huge noise. The message went to Anita Mehra. You know, she was the head of Dubai airports. And she heard it. And when I was on a panel discussion with her, she said, oh, it was you. So the toilet is built separately now.
Is it called, you know? Is it called Gulshan? We are going to be continuing the conversation through until 3 o'clock today. But that's wonderful to hear about the UAE. It really is. I have a good friend whose daughter has cerebral palsy, and they went back to the UK thinking, okay, that health service. No, they were there less than a year before coming back to Dubai, echoing exactly what you're talking about now. I love a busy studio, and I've got a very busy studio now. We've just been in conversation now with People of Determination advocate and podcast host Gulshan Kavarana is with us today. And we've also got a couple of the guests that have appeared on her show. I am so delighted to introduce you to, well, first of all, a man whose work you have definitely seen. Abdullah Lutfi is an Emirati artist known for his really unique black and white illustrations that capture everyday life in the UAE. As an artist on the autism spectrum, he uses this to describe social scenes, promote inclusion for people of determination, and his work has gained significant recognition. You've seen it everywhere from Al Fahidi to the airport, making him a really prominent figure in the art community. And we've got Zara Qumri with us as well, computer engineer who's been a guest and had a beautiful conversation with Gulshan. You've got the most common form of dwarfism. And I want to ask you, if you don't mind, how to pronounce it properly, Zara?
Sure, it's a achondroplasia.
Thank you so much for being with us today. And welcome to the show, Abdullah. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
I feel a bit starstruck meeting you because I've seen your art all over Dubai. Tell us, if you wouldn't mind, a little bit about your journey to becoming an artist. Where did it start?
Well, it all started when I was in the seventh grade in my old school day when we went to this, well, actually when I went to this art lessons in the classroom. And then when we started doing art, and then I decided to draw something, and then I started like drawing, but I used to use color once, but now none anymore because the color kind of stresses me a bit. So then I just prefer doing black and white instead of color because it's more unique for me.
It's so distinctive.
You're yes,
a monochrome man. How do you think you use your art to raise awareness, Abdullah, and promote inclusion?
Well, you see, ever since now that I'm graduated from mainstream school in grade 12, but my parents didn't decide me to take me university because I didn't have what it takes to study. So my parents take me to that nice art studio, which is called Mawahibs with Special Needs, which is an art studio. And that's where I met my first teacher named Gulshan Kavarana.
Here she is. You're mentoring Abdullah to this day. It must be amazing to watch
it's
his progress.
It's an honor.
You're glowing with pride. What does that look like, if you don't mind me asking, Gulshan, on a kind of day-to-day or, you know, longer-term basis? What are your hopes for working together?
First of all, I just want to say that he is a much better artist than I ever was.
You're going to be the teacher.
I learned from him. And yeah, it's just been fascinating working with him. And getting to know what autism is really like firsthand. And, you know, he's not just a person on the spectrum. He's a savant, you know.
Can you explain how you interpret that word, Abdullah, when talking about being a savant? What does that mean to you?
Well, you see, a savant is like when some people with special needs that have good capability, what they're very good at, and when some special need people that they're very good at something, like only one thing, then that means they're very good and very talented for what they're capable of. And that's what it means to be a savant syndrome.
10 out of 10. Zara, I so enjoyed the conversation that you and Gulshan and your husband had on the podcast. It was wonderful.
Thank you so much.
It really, really was. And as I said, you're a computer engineer. You've got a teenage daughter. How long have you been in the UAE for?
Now it's been 18 years.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
So quite some time. And you said to us off air that you've had some problems around inclusion of your daughter in schools. Would you mind explaining a little bit about what you've been through?
Firstly, I would love to thank Gulshan for the podcast. I think it's amazing. It's an amazing voice for we people of determination. And now that it's reaching masses, it's really nice. Mm-hmm. So do subscribe to the channel. And as Gulshan also mentioned before, UAE is a wonderful place for people of determination. However, there is a lack of awareness. In a lot of disabilities, there is people only want to see on, if they associate with a wheelchair, they say, okay, it's disabled.
That's for interesting.
For we little people, we are walking, we are talking. So they get confused that, are we disabled? Yes, dwarfism is a disability. And even for the other people of determination, they feel, okay, we are in the normal category.
So you feel like there's almost a hierarchy.
Higher, it's very true. And we feel sandwiched in between. We do feel sandwiched. Now, coming back to my daughter, yes, this is her third school. She was bullied quite a bit in the previous schools. The reason being, the main reason I would say is the kids have become very judgmental. And they try to label immediately. Mm-hmm. This also has to do a lot from home. I mean, why can't a parent give a not perfect doll to a child compared to a perfect doll right at the start? From where we come in India, three words of tall, beautiful, handsome is like engraved from the time the child is born. So they don't want to look beyond that spectrum. And when they see something different, they want to speak out.
I think it's a lot of it is discomfort. I think a lot of people don't know how to talk to their children about people being different in some ways. And that leads inevitably to fear and judgment and shame. And you're absolutely right. It starts at home. So what do you think some of the messages that you'd love to get out to parents listening today about how to speak to their children about everybody's different, and it just shows up in different ways sometimes?
So definitely when they see somebody different, don't laugh with them, don't stare with them. At that same moment, stop and explain to your children, why are we different? Mm-hmm. Now, my daughter too has dwarfism. My husband has induced shortness. So whenever we three are together, there are eyes continuously staring at us, turning at us. We go to vacation spots, people are taking our photographs instead of the tourist spot. So it's just an awareness that we want to be called by our names.
How does that make you feel? And do you feel like you've got used to that over the years, or is that something you're never going to get used to?
Just never going to get used to it. But now we have reached a stage where we ignore. Mm-hmm. But it hits my daughter. She doesn't like going out with us much because she says everybody just stares at us.
Being a teenager is hard enough at the best of times, but with extra levels of scrutiny, that must be really, really challenging.
Yes, it is challenging. That's why platforms like how Gulshan has started, what UAE is promoting, we need these.
I wanted to come back to a little bit around the conversation of inclusion, because Gulshan, you know, as we said before, people have very different experiences. People have, I mean, using autism as an example, you've met one person with autism.
Exactly.
You know, to say that all schools need to be inclusive is frankly unrealistic for an awful lot of families and indeed the schools. What do you think about
idea? For my daughter, who's nonverbal, who, you know, can barely walk, what she needed when she was growing up was therapy. Mm-hmm. Now, was the mainstream school going to provide her with therapy? No. But it would have made me feel, oh, my daughter's going to mainstream. But it's not for everybody. And I keep emphasizing this to parents. Will your child get therapy in mainstream? No. And, you know, do you have that extra money to spend for the mainstream school with the LSA teacher and give the therapy in the evening? Does your child even have the energy to do the therapies, which is really important? Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't believe that mainstream is for everybody.
Abdullah, can I ask you, how did you find school? What was school like for you?
Well, it was like I didn't know what school is, and then until I do. But when I was going there, just minding my own business, having fun with myself, and then kids start staring at me, and then they keep bullying me too much. Mm-hmm. Because I was bullied a lot through school when I was by myself with no friends. So, but now they accepted me the way I was.
You speak to a lot of other people of determination in the community. What do you say to younger teenagers and kids who might be bullied too? How do you keep them
just
positive?
Just accept them and love them the way they are, and also give them hope.
Why do you think hope is so important?
To help them live their life better.
Just a couple more minutes left before we head through to 3 o'clock. But we've got a trio of fantastic guests in the studio today. We have got Gulshan Kavanagh with us today. She is joining us as we talk about people of determination. She has got her podcast called
pod. It's a podcast by Gulshan. So if you do want details of that, send me the word pod. We've also got in the studio today acclaimed Emirati artist. Abdullah Lutfi is with us today. He is known for his unique black and white illustrations. And I can guarantee you will have seen them. You might not realise the man behind the talent, though, but we're delighted to have him with us as well. And also in studio today, we've got Zara Qumri, computer engineer, who's been talking about living with dwarfism and some of the day-to-day challenges, really. But ultimately, the UAE being somewhere that you never want to leave, Zara. Can I ask then, what are the hopes for your, for the future in terms of everything from common day-to-day challenges? You were talking before about ramps and access and how agile and responsive the UAE has been, Gulshan. But what about you, Zara? What would you love to see to change, whether it is attitude of people listening today or even the practical?
To start with, I would definitely want, I'm not sure if ARN does have a person of determination employed. So definitely we need more employment.
More representation.
Yes, much more representation. And someday see a leader at a top position as a little person. Mm-hmm. Running a country, running a huge organization.
And what about you, Abdullah? Can I ask you, what are your hopes for the future? You're already one of the best known artists in the UAE. What do you think the future has in store? What do you want to do in the future? Oh, I know what Gulshan's saying. You want to paint the Burj Khalifa?
Oh, yes. Yes. My future is to put my artwork on the Burj Khalifa. Well, a printed artwork, actually.
Like a projection?
Yeah, like a projection, yeah.
That would be very cool. It would work with the black and white. That would look really effective.
Yeah, a very strong projection that can see the outline real easily on the very expensive projection for the buildings.
Okay, well, we see if we know men in high places here.
On Emirates.
And also on Emirates as well.
On a plane?
Yes, on the plane. Printed as well.
This is why you're his mentor, Gulshan. Can I ask you then?
She's my perfect mentor.
Last question for you, Gulshan. What are your hopes for the podcast, the conversation, and obviously the culmination now of decades of work and advocacy?
So I want people to stop hiding behind this. I don't know what to say. I don't know what's appropriate. Find out. Watch the podcast, listen to them, and, you know, and stop being, behind this.
I'm going to say it, kind of willfully ignorant.
Exactly.
Because it's a choice, right? It's a choice to educate yourself and tune into a conversation, one that you might have said, I feel uncomfortable or awkward. Well, it's, you know.
Find out.
Yeah. Gulshan Kavarana, really, really appreciate your time. And if people want to send me POD or pod, I will happily send them the link for the YouTube. And you can see in action some of our guests today. And I have to say, your conversation, Zara, with your husband was just absolutely fantastic. And thank you, Abdullah. Thank you, Zara. Thank you, Gulshan, for your time today. And keep the conversation going.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having us.
Our pleasure. Diving into an important and often overlooked topic, the experience of single mothers from the outset in Dubai. Now, earlier in the year, we were talking about being a single parent here, and this could be for a number of reasons. We had a few different experiences. One of, you know, partners that are far away, you know, working far away. We also had divorce. We also had things falling apart during pregnancy as well. We are going to be speaking in just a minute to Katie Reese, who's called the UAE home for 13 years and is a solo mum to baby Tallulah. But let's have a catch up and hear from previous guest Samantha. She's got 6-month-old Ava, talking about how getting help has really helped.
In the beginning, I thought that I could do it without a nanny and just take some time off work and do this all by myself. I have a wonderful group of girlfriends around me as well. But 2 months in, all the night feeds, no sleep. You know, there were moments of pure joy, but there were moments where I was just so exhausted that I could see that this could become bad. So then I decided a nanny was an absolute must, and things have changed for me completely. I think I can see how single mums get depressed. I think I've done a lot of work previously around personal growth, changing of mindset, which has helped me enormously. I'm a meditation teacher. I don't meditate as much as I used to. Now I've got Bubba, but you know, the things I learned from that has certainly helped me remain calmer. And yeah, getting the nanny was an absolute game changer because I had to just accept I cannot do this all on my own.
Samantha Arnell there. But what about the legalities? What did she really have to address?
It was only after I'd given birth to Ava and I went to apply for the birth certificate, that I was informed, because I didn't have her father's documents, that the Dubai courts would name Ava. As her mum, as a single mum, I was able to choose her first name, and then the Dubai courts choose the middle name and the surname. I did sort of look into drawing up legal memos, etc. I probably could have taken it to court and, you know, asked to be tried by the laws of my own country, but I chose not to because I wanted to get her passport. We were travelling. And it was a little bit upsetting in the beginning, but I always find the silver lining. They actually named her. Surname has the meaning of pure and loving, and it all makes up part of her story. So for me, next time I would just look into the legalities of anything that was new. And, you know, I think it's good for people to know and understand what you may be facing if you choose to have your baby here as a single mum.
Samantha Arnell. Up next, we are going to be having a chat with Katie. Baby Tallulah's in the green room. I'm hoping she's going to come into the studio for a bit of a squeeze. And we're going to talk about the decision to have a baby alone here in the UAE. If you can hear a funny noise, it might be my ovaries exploding, because we've got the youngest guest, I think, ever in the Dubai Eye studio. 11-week-old Tallulah is here with her mummy, Katie. And I'm going to have genuine problems concentrating, Katie. She is so, so beautiful. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
What a super mum you are. She's just the most stunning little puppet.
Oh, thank you so much.
And thank you for reaching out to me. Hey, listen, it's a family-friendly show. She can be as bad as she likes. I don't mind a bit. I'll forgive that face anything. Thank you for reaching out to me, because we were talking about being a single parent on the show recently, and you got in touch and said, well, you know, what about the decision to have a baby alone? Let's go before that. Did you always want to be a mum, Katie?
Yeah, I did. And honestly, I just want to thank you, because I think it's wonderful that you put single mums on here, because it is a thing, you know, it does exist. We should talk about it.
Of course, absolutely.
I always wanted to be a mum, and then it just didn't happen, partner-wise. And then I won't lie to you or the guests, but she wasn't planned. And honestly, like, I've lived here for 13 years, and it's fantastic how the government are changing.
Absolutely.
And it's so different from when I came.
It really has, in terms of the legalities around it. And it's only been the last couple of years. And I think what an amazing opportunity to feel really embraced by a country that you said you've been here 13 years.
Yeah, it's because obviously before it'd just be quite restrictive on that. If you want to be a mom and you haven't got the, you know, normal inverted commas
set up.
Mm-hmm. So it is great that the government have changed so much in 13 years.
We're seeing more around, you know, IVF and egg freezing and that conversation changing a lot. Now, we just heard from Samantha there talking about the naming of the baby and some of the legalities that she wishes she'd kind of been aware of. How have you found that?
This is why I want to start a conversation, because I've had quite a few single mums actually reach out to me in floods of tears, bless them. It's not easy, because while the government might have changed, it still takes time, you know, for processes to catch up. And yeah, it just takes a little while, which is frustrating, but you can get there. And that's what I want mums to know, that, you know, you're not alone and you can get through it. It's just going to be
maybe a bit slower than
that. Yeah, and a bit maybe encounter things that you don't agree with or that are difficult, but you just kind of have to. It is what it is. Look, it's going to change.
And look down at that little
exactly. That
little koala, and how worth, you know, a bit of admin has absolutely
exactly,
been. And also, I mean, I know your doctor was Dr. Dornan at Al Zahra, who's an amazing.
Amazon, I love her.
She's so
she's
glad.
Wonderful.
She is honestly who I want to be when I grow up. I look at her, I'm like,
she's
you
amazing.
Do that while looking like that. She's just incredible.
She is.
But it must be important to have a doctor to advocate for you as well.
She was fantastic. Do you know what? Can I shout out my midwife? I have to shout out British Care, Julie Higgins, honest to God. Without her, I don't know what I would have done. I spoke to her early days and told her my situation, and the first thing she said was, you're not alone. And honestly, she was with me every step of the way. So it was her who connected me actually with Dr. Dornan. And they were exactly Dr. Dornan's words. She said, you're not alone. Like, we're family. We've got you. And it was just so nice to feel that. Because, you know, when you're away from home,
I know,
you need to have your created family.
And sometimes you just want some grown-ups around you as well.
Exactly. Now, who knows what they're doing?
You're a single mum, Katie. You've got that little 11-year-old beauty on you. How are you balancing the tutoring and yoga teaching and being a mum and all of that kind of the practical struggles as well, if you don't mind me asking.
So I was back to work 5 days after giving birth. I think she wants to talk on the mic.
Hi, Tallulah. 5 days.
Yeah, so which I did have a bit of a like breakdown not that long ago about that, because I was like, I think I just did too much too soon. But I'm freelance, so what can you do? You're freelance and you're single. It's like really well thought out planning here. But honestly, it's honestly been fine. I've been absolutely fine. I've got no help, and we can do it. But yeah, if anyone needs tutoring or yoga lessons,
drop us a little message. We'd be very happy to. So, what do you wish you had known before making this decision?
I do wish there was more of a conversation about the processes, and that's what I would love single women to know, because the birth certificate process, I won't lie to you, it's not easy, and it is going to upset you. You're dealing with so many emotions and hormones and a crying baby, and you're trying to feed them, and then you're trying to run all over Dubai, and money's tight if you're a single mum as well. You know, it's two incomes is always better than one, right? Mm. So that I wish I'd known what the process was with that. And I think I caught the tail end of your conversation of the choosing the names.
Yeah, I think... hi, sweet pea. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there as well.
Yes.
In terms of, you know, now, 11 weeks in, do you think there is somewhere that people can go to kind of fully understand, or is that something you're going to add to your never-ending to-do list?
Yeah, honestly, like if you want to share my details, if people want to reach out, I'll help anyone. I've helped a couple of people. It's not easy. And also the health insurance, that's a big one.
Tell me about that.
I had health insurance that had maternity cover, and I checked. I was actually in the UK and I checked before I came back that it was covered. My broker assured me it was. And it turns out they didn't cover me, and it cost me 40,000 dirhams, which obviously when you're going to be a single mum and you're working for yourself, it's just like that. I wish I'd known that as well, because obviously that's kind of money I can't really afford. Yeah, so it's put me in a bit of a bind. They say that they won't insure you if you're not married, but there's actually apparently, as per legal advice, there's no law or UAE policy that actually states that they can't insure single and married women.
It's not that explicit.
Yeah, so I don't know why, but it's one of those things. You just get into circles.
But sometimes you just need to keep pushing, don't you?
I know. But then it's difficult because no one's going to offer you legal stuff for free. Mm. You can ask a question and then they say, oh, okay, would you like a meeting for 3,000 dirhams? I'm like, I've just paid 40,000.
I'll just message Helen on a Monday afternoon and speak to Madeline Mendy.
I'm like, so I do wish women knew that and then knew, you know, what to do, and then the insurance for the baby. And because you just want, all you want is the baby to be safe, right?
It's that peace of mind, isn't it?
Yeah. So honestly, maybe I'll do a website or something that has information. Just
give yourself a few weeks, hon. Give yourself a bit of a break. What's the plan then? Are you hoping to stay in the UAE? It's obviously where you've built your life and your career.
Yeah, I mean, it's been home now for 13 years in Dubai, and I was in Abu Dhabi before.
She's so gorgeous.
So I would love to, and it is, you know, it is great, and it's changing all the time. Mm. You can't complain, because it's just, you know, you're seeing wonderful things happen daily here, and things do happen quickly, and then it's just
I've had a question here from Sai saying, what kind of tutoring does she do? Yes,
I love the cheeky plug.
Go on.
Sorry,
we'll take a cheeky plug. What kind of age group or subjects are you specializing in?
I actually do all ages. I've ended up from anything from about 3 or 4 up to university. I did start out with the older ones. And I do English, but with the younger ones, I tend to do a bit of everything. And I've done all curriculums, so IB, GCSE, because I was originally working for a family privately, and it just kind of, they just kept recommending me, even though I was supposed to be exclusively with them, which was great.
Good. So with your permission then, can I share your details with Sai and anyone else? What's the best way of getting in touch with you? Whether people do want to ask questions about the single motherhood journey, or indeed...
Instagram's probably the best, and then I can give my number on WhatsApp. So Instagram or WhatsApp is the best way. But honestly, I'd just love to help, because I just hate hearing anyone, upset. I've had a couple of mums call me like crying, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish that you had known to contact me sooner, because I could have just helped you as much as I can.
Okay, well, in that case, if you are listening and there's someone you've got in mind, or maybe it's you've got some unanswered questions, you want some reassurance, bit of peace of mind, a bit of an action plan between feeding and teaching and running around town and dealing with poonamis that, you know, 11 week olds have, Katie will connect you. If you want to send me the word family, that'd be nice.
That would be
to 4001. I'll connect you with Katie Reese, who's been in the studio today with 11-week-old Tallulah. And I am happily going to go to the headlines, because then I can have a snuggle. Thank you so, so much for coming in. I really appreciate you reaching out. And as you said, I think it's so important to hear people's different lived experiences and give a platform to
thank
that.
Thank you for giving a platform. Thanks
My
for
pleasure.
Having us.
She
we appreciate
is
it.
A poppet.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With House & House, 10 years of unlocking opportunities in Dubai real estate.
I know I shouldn't have favourites from House & House, but one of them is in the studio now. Rennie Sanger is with us today, sales manager for Off Plan and Investments. And you're going to be busy. I've had, because we're talking property law after four as well today.
Sure.
Got a number of people asking for just some general queries. And I guess maybe today we can put some minds at ease and
happy to help
demystify a bit of the Off Plan purchase. So now, obviously, you're here with your Off Plan hat on, but when it comes to buying off plan versus buying a ready to go property, what are some of the questions you need to ask yourself to establish which is the route for you?
First of all, we finances. A key consideration is how much do you have available now? I think it's easy for me to sit here and sell off plan and that be my primary sort of thing that I do in real estate. But I think the key consideration is if you've got the funds available to have a deposit together and can pay all the associated fees, it can often be a better choice to get something that's ready, providing that A, you can afford it. It's in the areas that you want to be, whether that's school catchment and so on and so forth. But also if it's going to live up to the kind of lifestyle requirements you need. Because now being here as tenants in some locations and so on, we've come to learn and love these sort of communities. But because the price of sort of the last few years, it's now kind of become out of price point.
Yeah.
So now we're looking at more maybe emerging markets, different locations where we can get a bit of value for money. And it might, in that situation, make more sense to go with an attractive payment plan that allows you to almost leverage your position over the course of 3 years and then go ahead and get the property that ticks all the lifestyle requirements, equally not having to shell out a lot of money at any given time.
Can we talk about payment
sure,
plans then?
Please,
how that might differ to buying a ready property? So for off plan, and a lot of the developers are offering some really, really attractive things right now.
Yeah.
What can that look like?
They scale. So I think depending on what sort of developer and what projects you're looking at, but I think you could be looking at anywhere between 20% down payment during the course of construction up to 90% being the kind of most aggressive, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And the majority of the bigger name developers will probably sit somewhere between 60% during construction up to about 90%.
And when we're saying during construction, what kind of time period is often put in place?
During the whole kind of 3 year period. So construction typically looks like 3 to 4 years, depending on what it is. But you could safely say 80 to 90% of the developers will be looking to spread that 80%, for example, over the 3 years, with the first year being approximately about 30% within year one.
You mentioned there before about emerging areas, Rennie. Where's hot right now for off plan? What are you excited about and what are
Dubai
people excited about?
Dubai South, which is like a complete movement at the moment. Obviously, there's no secret now with the news of Al Maktoum Airport and the big expansion and what that looks like over the next kind of 10 years or so. And I think we've almost seeing like almost an Al Qudra type community being built out there with lots of the kind of different townhouse and villa options from the likes of Imar, from Damak, from quite a few different developers that actually got lots of projects that they're launching in that area. I mean, Imar have about four different communities in and around that location, in addition to Expo, I know you've gone to see yourself firsthand.
I've nearly put my hand in my wallet when I saw the apartments there. Really, really fantastic. But you're right, in terms of that shift of attention down there. I always speak to our friends at Spinneys and be like, where are you opening stores in the next 3 years?
Good consideration, right? Yeah, exactly. Wherever they go, you can almost bet that it will become a
Dubai
great area.
South's on the list.
Absolutely, yeah,
of course,
for sure.
Of course it is. So hot areas there. As I said, got a number of questions coming in now for Rennie Sanger, the sales manager for Off-Plan Investments. Some are more legal, so I'm going to keep those for Jasmine, who's joining us to talk law after four. But what about the changing circumstances? So what happens if you do... say, yep, I'm going to buy off plan. Let's use Dubai South as example, saying I'm going to buy a townhouse that's going to be ready in 3 years' time.
Sure.
Here's my, you know, 30% in the foot. You know, what happens if you do have a change of circumstances? You can no longer afford to make the repayments. You know, what can you cancel? What happens?
You can cancel. It would be a shame to forfeit the property and give it back to the developer, where you then don't really get any benefit out of it. That is why you should be really working with a brokerage or a broker that actually can help facilitate not only the purchase of the property, but actually the resale of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are buying and you've been well advised in purchasing good investments, the likelihood is when you are reselling that property, it can often be at a profit. So kind of coming full circle, whether it's for personal use or investment, you could almost do both simultaneously.
We've got the sales manager for Off-Plan and Investments, Rennie Sanger, in the studio talking about everything you need to know about buying off-plan. I have to say, lots of questions. Had through some on social, some 4001. One here saying, apart from Dubai South, any other recommended areas for buying off-plan?
It depends on price point, but some key areas at the moment are Dubai Creek Harbour, which is by Emaar. Beautiful, beautiful location. I'm still surprised the amount of people who have not actually visited it and seen it firsthand.
Do you know what? They were so smart with their marketing. I don't know if you remember this. Pre-COVID, they started having activations at the weekend saying, come to Dubai Creek Harbour. You know, obviously nothing was being built, but it was a way of kind of people familiarising themselves. Views, live music,
stunning.
Amazing play park for the kids. And I thought that was such a smart way of becoming part of a community that didn't even exist yet.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember quite a few people, and I've taken my kids there as well, but they've got that pirate ship that kind of gets out the dock and goes all the way around Business Bay and Festival City. Beautiful. Probably one of the best sundowners you'll find in Dubai.
And nice hotels.
If you look at the skyline.
There's a Vida, isn't there? And the dress?
Yes, yes, yes.
There's quite a few now.
Yeah, palace residences and so on and so forth. Yeah.
So Dubai Creek Harbour, and that's more apartments.
So that's more apartments. You have Motor City seeing some big regeneration. At the moment, there's a new launch that's going to happen very, very soon. Literally imminently, where you're going to see apartments. There's some heavy investment by some of the bigger name developers like Soba. Which are renowned for their quality, but some other really big players that have been around for many, many years, like Union Properties. Now, they've got a development that's happening very soon. I can't say too much.
You've got a real twinkle in your eye there.
I know, but this is really, really worth kind of getting behind. So great investment opportunity there. So they have apartments, townhouses, and villa options. Now, Motor City, as you probably know, has this wide array of cafes, restaurants, there's
great schools nearby.
Absolutely. So you're within that kind of school corridor. So whether you need apartment, townhouse or villa, you can almost service that hospital, schools, very family orientated lifestyle, which it doesn't sit in like a proper master community, so to speak. So I think the value proposition is very much there.
What
and
about,
then the other area will be Arjan, which kind of is not too far as well.
What about types of properties? Where are you seeing the most movement? I mean, obviously the kind of entry level is your classic one bed apartment investment, you know, maybe it's for someone else to live in, maybe it's for you. But as we kind of said there, this kind of idea of family settling, do you think enough townhouses and villas are being built?
They're not. There's just simply not enough coming to the market. What we've actually seen happen now as well is some people who have lived in apartments have become used to these kind of really generously sized apartments. What they're struggling to do is make the shift, and I'm kind of going through those motions now, making a shift to a townhouse, because what you'd get on one level on an apartment is now spread over two floors in a townhouse.
So perception wise, it's
exactly
it's
so
not mapping.
It still might be, for example, a three bedroom might still sit around 2,000 square feet, but suddenly once you include your balconies and that split over two floors, a bit of wasted space, being across one single floor, you've got far more generously proportioned rooms. Now, some people are actually thinking, well, I can live in areas like Arjan or, you know, surrounding areas where I'm getting a lot more bang for my buck. I'm living in an apartment, yet I have access to those really good schools. That is a big key consideration when you're looking at townhouse villa communities.
That's interesting. So So kind of maybe a three-bed with maid's apartment could do really, really well in certain areas.
It really can. And I think we're going to see that big trend. I think if you were a smart investor or even for personal use, you'll be looking at 2 and 3 bedrooms. 2-bedroom plus maids are real steal if you can find them in the market. A few developers do it. A lot of the big developers don't. So when you do find them, like Ellington Properties, have that configuration, very standout boutique developer with exceptional design quality. Definitely something to consider.
Get on it. Henrik's saying, how does it work if a project gets cancelled? How long do you have to wait before getting your payments back? How protected are you as a buyer?
As a buyer, your money is going directly into escrow when you purchase a property. So your money is always sitting in a government account. So it's never going to disappear. If the project has been cancelled, to be honest with you, I can't say in my tenure here in Dubai, I've ever seen a property or sorry, a project get cancelled, not at least within the last kind of 5.5, 6 years. Yes, it did used to happen. I think the reason why I'm probably not as familiar with the process is I just wouldn't recommend developers that will probably end up being cancelled in that sense. But there is a process for it. It probably is a bit of more of a strenuous process to get the money back. But there is a process and you just follow up with Dubai Land Department.
With your permission, Rani, if people want to send me the word house or the house emoji, if people want to pick up on some of the things you've been talking about today, because at the end of the day, you are the man in the know. You're the one with a twinkle in your eye about these upcoming announcements. Can I connect you with anyone who wants to reach out?
Absolutely.
Okay, there you are. If you are one of the savvy investors, whether it's for yourself or for investment, please don't hesitate. You just send me the word house or the house emoji. I'll send you Rennie's details so you can connect with him. It's all about who you know. Your network is your net worth. And I have had a number of messages that we haven't been able to get to with House and House State. So I'm going to put those to Jasmine, who's joining us after Floor. Thank you so much.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Property law today with the fantastic Jasmine Stevenson from Kashwani Law. Good to have you back and congratulations on the new addition, mummy.
How are you doing? Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. So I've just had my baby. She's 4 weeks old today, Olivia.
Oh, 4 weeks?
Yeah, she's tiny. Oh, so we're really enjoying our time at the moment.
Well, thank you for being here.
That's fine.
Back for all the cuddles afterwards.
Yeah, 100%. It feels really weird to be out of the house without her, actually. So
I feel like you've forgotten something.
Yeah, I know. Literally, like I've forgotten something or left something behind.
Well, thank you. I really do value your time. And as I said, it's going to be a busy one
today. Great. Nice to see you again.
And you. We've got a couple of things that you wanted to address. We've got loads of text messages as well. Can we talk about rent payments?
Sure.
About via bank transfer, check, you know, what kind of trends are we seeing and what do we legally need to be doing when it comes to paying our rent?
Yeah, so we've seen a lot of issues actually recently where usually checks, rent payments were always made via check. So the issue we're seeing now is a lot of landlords who are not in the country or abroad or just clients are not in the abroad, are not around and tenants aren't around, they're doing payments via bank transfer. So the issue we're seeing that we've had a few email addresses that have been hacked and then, you know, bank account information has been changed and requesting funds from the tenants. So we've seen some serious issues with large amounts where the wrong amount has actually been sent to, well, a large amount has been sent to the wrong account, in which then you're kind of in a tricky situation because technically you've paid your rent to a stranger, your landlord hasn't received the rent, and then technically you haven't paid your rent to the right person. So we're seeing a lot of legal cases that are coming up there.
What can you do if that is...
So we always advise clients now to, first of all, make sure that you have potentially spoken to your landlord on the phone. Our preference is to never pay a rental amount via bank transfer, to be honest, unless it's in the, you know, landlord's name and there's, you know, actual physical proof that that is their account number. You know, it can be really risky because you know how it is here. People sometimes take cash payments, which is completely allowed. Sometimes you ask, you know, can you pay into my wife's account? Yes. You just never know, you know, how people are asking to be paid. So we really say to clients, you know, even if it's a couple of days late on the rent, you know, you have 30 days to pay your rent. Even if you've finished your checkbook, really try your best to issue that check in the landlord's name, and it's the name on the tenancy contract, not just a random name that they request. If you have to make a bank transfer, try and do a three-way verification process, you know, in person, over the phone, ask for ID, things like that. Because even if you say, okay, can you send me an email confirmation? If that's not the right person on the end, you're making a, you know, a bank transfer to a random person, and it's really difficult to get that money back, because technically you have, by choice, whether or not you've been tricked in ETC, you've made that payment. Exactly.
Okay.
So we're asking clients to keep their eye out for that. Yeah.
Good intel. We've got a message here from Winona saying, I need guidance on a property matter. I'm buying property for the first time in Dubai. The agent made me sign Form F, which I thought is only for valuation of the property. Now he's telling me it's an MOU and I can't back out of the deal. I'd have to pay him 10% of the property value. Please guide. What is a Form F?
Yeah, so a Form F is actually the legal document that you sign, normally by e-signature, which means you are confirming that you are going to purchase a property. So that is an issue there if you weren't aware that that's actually a legal valid document that binds you. Usually with a Form F, if you do sign and agree to purchase a property and you change your mind for whichever reason, unless it's sort of force majeure, you are then legally liable to pay 10% to the other party, who obviously you're in a contract with. It's a legally binding contract.
So I don't know about Winona's case in particular, but presumably she may have already written a check for 10% of the property value, which would then would be banked.
Yes, so legally they can't just take and bank the cheque. They shouldn't be doing that. Legally, you have to go through a proper UAE court case where a judge will say, yes, you now deserve that 10%. Mm. So when you have a situation like this where it's sort of like a pre-litigation dispute, it's not gone to court yet, there's a few things you can do. You can obviously speak to our law firm and we can do some mediation on your behalf. But also, if you can have a look for any evidence that the broker involved, because I believe she said that it was the broker that told her it was a valuation certificate, we need to try and get some evidence to prove that she was unaware that this was a contract that she was signing up for. So yeah, if she wants to drop us an email afterwards, then we'll have a look at the documents and then we can go from there for her.
Thanks, Jasmine. Right, in the studio today, we are talking property law. Jasmine Stevenson with us from Kashwani. If you want her details, send me the word law. Although I'm going to try and not overwork her. She's got a newborn at home, but she's got a great team as well. I am here with you through until 5 o'clock. We've had questions about receiving an increase of 30% on rent. We've had questions about properties being undervalued and wanting to get out of that, about bills that might not be intended for you, and eviction notices as well. So we are here for you on 4001 on the app and the WhatsApp, which is 0487155000. You don't need to put your name on those text messages. Makes absolutely no odds to us at all. Just make sure you've got somewhere to turn to for some ideas, an action plan and a bit of peace of mind.
Dubai Eye 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
Joining us in studio live to answer your questions and mine, but most importantly yours, Jasmine Stevenson from Kashwani Law. If you want her details, send me the word law to 4001. Now, we've had a flurry of messages, so I know these people are listening now, Jasmine. So let's go to that and then we can come to some that came in earlier and on social. A message here saying, is there a way to find out if residents in a certain property have bought it or are renting? We recently moved because we were told it was being sold. New residents quickly moved in and now I'm not sure if they really purchased it or actually renting it.
Sure, yeah. We're seeing a lot of these issues now because a lot of landlords are sending out legal notices. Obviously, there's only really two or three options. One is that we're going to sell it and one is we're going to move in personally. So what you can do is there is actually a website called DXB Interact. You can have a look on there and you can see if a property has recently been rented or not, exactly your unit number and information. Whenever you move out, take your DWA premise number because we can then also have a look for it for you, who is actually renting it or if it's the owner staying in there. If you do discover that it has recently been rented and it's not under the name as you would expect it was, which would be the name under the legal notice, you can then come to us and we can do an investigation for a few thousand dirhams. We can find out who's actually living there. You can also go to RERA and make a complaint, as well as going to the Dubai courts, essentially. If you do find out that you have been evicted technically illegally, you know, your landlord has said he's going to sell it or he's going to move in, and you find out he's actually just rented it out, then you can claim compensation, a mixture of your previous rent as well as your move out costs. Because it's technically illegal to rent a property out within the 2 years. If you've used a notice and you've technically told a porcupine there, it's not actually legal. And you as the tenant can claim compensation.
So that is a website or an app?
It's a website and an app, I believe.
Oh,
yeah.
dxbinteract.com. Yeah. If you want to send me the word app, I'll send you the link there and you can download it. But yeah, where, if you want to know a property's value or indeed if there's any transactions for buying or renting. That's a great thing to have in your back pocket.
Yeah.
And staying with that as well, a message here from Luis saying, my landlord sent me an eviction notice stating two reasons. Wants to move in / wants to sell. I thought he had to give one reason. Is he doing something that's not in accordance with RERA rules and regulations? And if so, what are my options? What should I do? Should he issue a fresh notice? And would the 12 months start counting from the fresh notice?
Sure. It would be hard to say because I actually need to see the actual legal notice to see if it's valid or not. So you can send it over to our team. We've obviously got the real estate experts over at Kashwani Law, so they'll have a look at the document for you. But aside from that, whenever you receive a legal notice, you just have to remember it is literally just a piece of paper. So no one can actually force you out of the door with just that piece of paper. If a landlord really wants to evict you, he has to take you to court and serve a legal eviction. And then the judge is the only person that can decide if you have to move out or not. Mm-hmm. So the judge decides if the legal notice is valid, first of all, and if the owner is actually telling the truth about why he wants to evict you. You know, he has to prove he's either really has intention to sell. He also has to prove that if he's moving in, this is the only unit he can actually live in. You know, if you've got multiple properties, it doesn't seem realistic that they would take just your unit to move mm-hmm. into. And if he is, that's fine, no problem. But he just has to prove that to the judge. So you don't necessarily have to move out on the day of that eviction, you know, being received. But if you have a really good relationship with your landlord and you reach a mutual agreement, then you don't need to go to court or investigate in that way.
Jasmine, with us today, a message here from Addy saying, my apartment contract is due to be renewed in 3 months' time. I've lived in it for 3 years. Every year there's a typical 14% increase in rent, but this year I got an increase request of 30%. This makes the original price from 3 years ago go almost up to 60%, which feels like broad daylight robbery. I'm not willing to pay 30% more, but I also don't want to move out because I've invested quite a lot of money in it and it's close to work. This increase must be illegal. What's the best way of refusing the price and not getting evicted?
Sure. So to refuse the price, basically, the best thing for you to do is to go to RERA and you open a legal case for you to renew your contract. RERA are the only people, and you know, the Dubai courts are the only people that can actually say what the legal rental amount is. So if you can't reach a mutual agreement with your landlord directly, those are the people that decide. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't say yes or no if this percentage is, but it does sound quite high.
But the cap is 20%.
It is 20%, but recently, I need to double check with my team, but there have been some laws where landlords have been doing valuations of properties, which we've seen a slightly higher increase on the rental amount, especially where clients are mutually agreeing to stay. So the only person, I can't say how much you have to pay or not, sorry, but the only people that can decide is you go to RERA, you make a request to renew your rental contract, and RERA will then decide, okay, what's going on here? What is the percentage amount legally that needs to be increased? Whether they accept that you don't have to pay an increase at all, or whether they agree what the percentage is. They're the only people that can decide that. So the best thing to do for a few thousand dirhams is head on down there and get it in paperwork done properly.
What I would say, this is such a Dubai thing, my hairdresser's been to RERA recently and said it was a really positive experience. But when last time I saw her, she was like, I think she'd had a similar thing, landlord asking for a very high increase in rent. And she was like, she felt really supported the whole way through and everything went a lot quicker. I think we kind of forget sometimes just how protected we are as tenants here
in
the UAE.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's set up to go in person and deal with issues without really needing us as a law firm. So you really only, I'm underselling myself here, but you really only need us, and obviously to pay legal fees and things like that once it gets to a litigation stage in the court. You know, it's pre-litigation, it's their set up to actually help the tenants and landlords.
Brilliant.
So yeah, definitely utilise them. It's a
Thank
free service.
You.
Dubai Eye 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
Lots of questions coming in for Jasmine Stevenson. She's with us from Kashwani Law. I've had a question for me though, Jasmine. Do you want to hear this one?
Always, yes.
No legal help needed, but can you tell me your hairdresser's name? Your bangs are always banging. It's Ali at Headcase. She's very nice. Great crack. She's had a really good RERA experience. So do I. Right, the text line we go. We've had a question about buying from the secondary market and how can you get a kind of a guarantee on the warranty of the build structure? You know, are these new warranties and guarantees then assigned to the new owner? Jasmine, what do we need to know there?
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult on the secondary market because the initial buyer is the person who has the initial sales contract and most of the information is actually in that document. So whenever you're actually buying, you know, a property on the secondary market, you really want to try and ask for that document from the first buyer if it's possible and ask your agent to try and get that for you. Okay. In terms of looking into liabilities and warranties and structural issues on buildings, the best thing to do is to come to us so we can do some investigative research for you, find out who the original developer is, what was in the original SPA agreement, and then try to obviously resolve whichever issue you've come across as a secondary owner.
It could be quite interesting, I think, over the next 2 years to think about how the recent floods are going to be affecting build structure and, you know, perception of certain areas and things like that.
Well, I know they've affected my car insurance. I don't know if anybody's renewed their car insurance, but all of the insurances have actually gone up based on a new UAE mandate. So that was also news for me when I had the bill come through.
Can't wait for that to come in September. Fantastic. Yeah. Interesting.
Property insurance is something else that we're actually pushing. I know that with the House and House team, I've done quite a few insurance quotes to actually protect their assets internally. But unfortunately, I did it for them before the floods came. So they were a little bit annoyed with me when they received the bill. But obviously, after the floods came, they were really happy with me because all of their items were protected. But yeah, home and contents insurance is something that we're really pushing now because we always say, obviously, prevention better than cure. A lot of issues with the floods and just trying to keep people aware of that. Those insurances do protect you when those random force majeure acts do come up.
Jasmine, I have a number of people asking for the app that you mentioned earlier. So this is if you want to check about the rental or sales of a property. It's called dxbinteract.com. Right. A message here asking for your details, anonymous, and you don't need to put your name on it, saying, how can we prove we never received an email notifying us of our lease renewal and the dreaded rent increase? This has happened 2 years in a row. Landlord has sent emails and we've never received them. However, we have had emails about parking on our compound. Our neighbours received their renewals via hand. My husband has been checking his emails every day as the 90-day notice period has passed and for weeks he's not received anything in his inbox or junk folder. When he searches for the agent's email address, nothing comes up. Agent's always very aggressive, is now charging us for waste renewal fees of 3.5 thousand dirhams per annum. What can we do? It seems really unethical. Thank you for any advice.
Okay, sure. So first of all, any email that's coming to you needs to be from the email address on the tenancy contract. So usually, obviously I haven't seen your document, you can send it over to us, but usually it's the landlord's information on the tenancy and your own rather than the agent's. So whenever you're receiving requests for anything, it should be legally from, you know, the email address on that tenancy contract. If it is the agent's email address, then, and you're saying that you haven't received the increase and they are then claiming that they did send it to you within the 90 days, the best thing to do is to go to RERA and raise a complaint that you haven't received the request and request to renew your rent based on the old rent. Mm-hmm. What will then happen is RERA will open a case and the owner or the agent or whoever is legally the person who's meant to be in correspondence with you will actually have to prove that they've sent that email. In very complicated cases where, you know, it's very complicated between both of the parties, you can actually get an expert to come in and look at IP addresses and emails to prove that the email has or hasn't been sent.
Oh, like a digital forensic detective.
Correct, yes. Yeah. So the judge, if it gets that far, a judge will actually assign an expert to come in, interview everybody, check your emails, because obviously just stating outright that you've sent the email isn't enough. If you really go to a legal case, they will look into it properly for you with an expert.
So we know in terms of eviction notices being served legally, when it comes to rent renewals, is an email or even a WhatsApp sufficient?
So usually it's always an email from the registered email address on the tenancy contract to the email address that is on your tenancy contract. Okay. That is usually only what the judge accepts. Further correspondence and negotiations via WhatsApp or any form of communication is normally also accepted. But for that notice to be official, it should be email to email.
Perfect. Jasmine Stevenson with us today. If you want her details, send me the word law and I'd be very happy to connect you. I know sometimes it can be a bit tricky to explain what you're after and, you know, in a forum such as this. So we are happy to help. A message here, and I'm going to try and understand. It's quite a long one. So bear with me. Saying I was, I had given eviction notice to my tenant last year so that I could move in. However, midway, I changed my mind to sell the property due to fund requirements. My tenant has vacated the units 10 days ago, and since then I'm trying to sell. However, due to ongoing construction just beside the building, clients are not willing to buy the property because of the noise, dust pollution, environment, etc. In this case, I will have to wait at least 3 years for the construction to be finished and then sell the unit. For this period, since I'm not being able to sell, can I rent out on short term as holiday homes or long term basis and wait till I get a buyer who's ready to buy the unit? However, what if a current tenant puts in a case against me for reletting the unit? How can I tackle this? So sure. Hearing my landlord now.
Yeah, sure. So legally, as you know, you're not actually meant to rent to somebody else within 2 years. So you would have to either go back to the tenant and try to reach an agreement with them, because there is a little loophole in the law here. So if you agree with your previous tenant to offer them any form of compensation, it really depends on your relationship with them, of course, because a settlement between the two of you is always the easiest way to resolve things. So if you go back to your previous tenant and explain the situation to them, if they are understanding, they can actually always sign a waiver to say they're not going to pursue you in a legal case. If they're not so understanding and they're a little bit miffed because they've been evicted and you want to sort of, you know, re-rent it again now because your circumstances have changed, you can offer them a small amount of compensation, you know, their removal costs or something like that. If you put that in a contract or an agreement, then legally they can't pursue you in the courts. So that's what we would recommend that you do. If you decide to not do that, to not take my advice, then you can obviously wait to see if they open a case against you. And if they do open a case against you, you can ask the judge to prove that there are extenuating circumstances. But really, it's a little bit hard to prove that. You would have to do a lot of research. You'd have to do expert reports, which are going to be quite costly to prove your situation. So the best thing to do is to go back to your tenant and be open and honest with them. That's what we would suggest.
Great advice. Great advice. So that's interesting to hear from the landlord's point of view. We've had lots of tenants getting in touch, including this one saying, our landlord evicted us saying he wanted to sell, but he's renting it out as a holiday home, brackets, not registered, which is not listed and paid in cash. Saying, no proof, but can we take action?
Sure. So for holiday homes, legally, you need a DCTM license. So anybody who's renting out a holiday home, Airbnb, there's laws in the UAE. You can't really, we can't really do that, unfortunately. So what you would do is you can make a complaint to the Common Authority, DCTM. They will do an investigation for you. They can randomly show up at the apartment. You can make a complaint to municipality as well. They'll do random checks on the apartment. If they find out that this person is renting out the property in an illegal way, they will then pursue them themselves. That doesn't actually get you any compensation for what's happened. So what you want to try to do is stay in touch with the authorities. If you do get that confirmation, then you can open a civil case with us as a law firm. If we have adequate proof, as in a DCTM report that says this is what's happening, then we can pursue compensation for you. But we need that paperwork. We can't just say it and then hope for the best, basically, and win a case.
You are a whirlwind woman in baby brain. I don't think so. Jasmine Stevenson is with us today. It's your very last chance to get any questions in for her on 4001 on the app or the WhatsApp. We've had a number of people, again, talking about, being evicted and what your kind of recourse is there. We've also had a message asking about when you started that purchase process of a property, the property's been undervalued by 150,000 dirhams. Can you get out? We'll be finding out. We are here for you through until five, but as I said, it's a busy one and we'd love to help you out, but pick up that phone sooner rather than later. Heading over now to find out what's happening on your roads with Milani.
Dubai Eye 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
Joining us in studio, property law specialist, we have got the fantastic Jasmine Stevenson, or Bernard, depending on. So the email address is Bernard. So if you want her email, which many of you are, send me the word law to 4001. Jasmine's from Kashwani Law. And we are talking property. Right. To the text line for a last minute flurry of messages, as they always come in, as I've predicted. A message here saying, we got an eviction notice to sell/personal use and the landlord has since sold. We have 3 months till eviction date. Where do we now stand, as we haven't heard from the new owner? We think they might have sold within family, exploiting a loophole.
Sure. I mean, realistically, if there has been a sale that's gone through the DLD, it technically counts as a sale regardless of who you sell it to. But like I said, any time with a legal eviction notice, you don't have to necessarily leave on that day. If you think there's something suspicious going on or the legal notice isn't, you know, genuinely valid, what you have to do is you can go to the court and open a case against the owner, or you can wait for the owner to open a case against you. And only a judge can legally evict you. So that's what we would advise you do. We can't really say yes or no, this is valid, this has been sold, mm-hmm. this hasn't. Ask the Dubai courts and they'll make a decision for you.
Okay. Jay's been in touch saying, hi both, I've put myself in a really difficult situation. I need some advice. I wanted to buy a property in Dubai, and when my mortgage was pre-approved, I gave the down payment 200,000 dirhams. After that, they did the property valuation and decided the property was worth 150,000 dirhams less than the mortgage, and it wouldn't be enough to pay for the apartment. I don't have the extra 150,000 dirhams and I can't get a loan because if I do, the mortgage won't be approved. The agent says if I don't buy the apartment, they won't give back the 200,000 dirham down payment that I've already given. Is there any way around this to get that 200,000 back? I don't know what to do. It took me years to save the money and now everything is gone.
Yeah, of course. Legally, I mean, how have you, first of all, just drop me a message on how you've actually made this payment, because you should only ever be putting down payments in the form of a cheque. Secondly, people can't just keep your money randomly. If you've signed a contract, which is normally a Form F, which is a legally binding contract, but there are terms to that. So if you don't get the mortgage pre-approved, approved eventually, if the valuation is actually under the property value, then usually it comes under as force majeure, where technically you can't afford to buy that property. So when that happens, normally the contract is seen as, you know, you cannot go for further, you can't afford to buy the property, and you should receive your 10% check back. If you don't receive your 10% check back, then we can open a legal case and a judge can force the other party to give you your check back. So technically, nobody should be taking your check and banking it until there's an actual physical judgment that says they can or they can't.
Good advice. This has just come in, and I don't know if it's in your wheelhouse, but shall we spin the wheel and
yeah,
see?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Saying Canna Group, this is, we haven't had this on the show before, but who knows. Can a group of investors who purchased a hotel apartment have the option to cancel the agreement with the operator and change it to a normal residential apartment before the expiry of management agreement?
No, I don't think so. I'll have to double check at the documents, but from what I've been told, a hotel apartment is always legally listed on a title deed as a hotel apartment, which comes with its positives and its negatives. Mm-hmm. From what I know, if it's listed on a title deed, you cannot change a contract or documents to suggest it's a residential apartment, even if it is a residential apartment inside a hotel apartment, if that makes sense. But you never know. Have a look at it. Send us the documents. We'll see what we can do. It depends on the developers, depends on the DLD. There's always options. Dubai is full of dreams, so we can always try.
I am going to reply to this message right now with your email address.
Perfect. Thank you.
And a message just come in saying, is there a law against random increases in rent for furnished apartments, including bills, whenever market demand is high, mainly during winter months? Thank you.
Is this for short-term lets?
That was my thought. It doesn't specify that, but...
For short-term lets, I know that the prices are varied. For long-term lets, you know, legally under ear, if you have a tenancy contract, your rent shouldn't be seeing an increase and a downcrease as and when, you know, the summer and winter months come in when it's more popular. Mm. But for short-term lengths, usually, unless you've signed a longer-term contract in paper, I know that the short-term rents do fluctuate in property prices.
It's supply and demand.
Yeah.
We see it on our friends, the Ibis apartment, the Ibis hotel over the road.
Yeah.
You're like, that's just Dubai's barometer.
Yeah. Only let your family come when it's summer, so the prices are low.
Crafty, she says. Her mum coming over in a few weeks, Jasmine Stevenson. I know your game. We've run out of time. We haven't run out of questions. Hang on. Do you know what? I'm squeezed. This has just come in. Can a landlord evict if they want to change to usage from residential to commercial?
So basically, it depends on the legal notice and it really depends on the judge. Nobody can just evict you randomly with a random statement. So what you always want to do is make sure that you send us in those documents, let us review what they've sent you in terms of changing something to commercial, and then we can let you know legally whether it can be done or cannot be done. If we think there's something that we can't answer, then we've obviously got the whole team there that can assist. We can take it to the judge, we can ask our experts. We've got Ahmed Keshwani, 40, 50 years in business, so he pretty much knows everything.
He knows it inside. Yeah.
inside
out. So send us those documents on email now and we'll have a look and then I'll come back to you via email.
I'm going to literally reply to this message now with your email address. Guys, if you want to send me the word law to 4001 or on the WhatsApp, I will send you Jasmine's details. But please don't work her too hard. She's got a 4-week-old baby, but you've got a great team to support as well.
Yeah, we do. Yes,
thank you so much. So, so lovely to see you.
Thank you so much, Helen.
And get back for some snuggles.
Yeah.
Bring her in next time, please. the fantastic Jasmine Stevenson from Kashwani there. And you can get me, as I said, on 4001.
Dubai Eye 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5pm.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.